No,
mind. I just hear music. Can you close that window?
Doesn't matter.
I still can hear music.
Welcome to PRN's Progressive Radio News Hour. I'm Steve Lindman. My guests today are Lynn Stewart and her husband, Ralph Pointer. I think my listeners are well acquainted with both of them, and we'll certainly, those who aren't, will certainly learn more during the program. Ralph, Lynn, I guess we're connected.
Well, no thanks to Ralph. Thank you.
No thanks to Ralph.
Oh, God.
Oh, it's wonderful having you both on. I know we originally scheduled to have you on a week ago, but you had a trip planned, so we postponed it for a week, which is fine. It's terrific having you on today. Oh, there's so much going on. Literally, I could throw a dot at the board of all the things I write about and pick a topic. But let me throw the ball to both of you. With all going on in the country and the world, pick a topic you want to discuss, and we can jump from that to another one or two.
Yes, I would like to begin to talk about how I believe we are winning, because we are in a revolution, and it is an information revolution. People are beginning to get it. We see over in Ferguson, the people have rejected Al Sharpton, the head of the NAACP, and
as spokesmen.
As spokespeople for the cause. Come on, help me out, Lynn.
I don't know what you're talking about right
when
now.
They, it came on the mass media, the corporate media, 2 days ago. The people at Ferguson had rejected Cornel West, the head of the NAACP.
I didn't hear Cornel West, but I think that Ralph is absolutely right, and that I actually did not hear the news report. He heard it. But I think that even if they rejected just Sharpton and the head of the NAACP, that's a step in the right direction. It shows that they're not going to accept the leadership that media provides. And media, of course, as you well know, Steve, is very active, is very, very, interfering. And if the people rise and say, no, we're not going to accept that, that Ralph is right. That I wouldn't go so far as to say we're winning, but I would say it certainly is a step in the right direction.
Well, we're gaining on them. I like your book when you educate people about Eastern Europe. What is happening? You know, that is education. It's going out there to people who need to know. And I see the reversal. It is no longer immigrant go home. It's immigrant you can't go home. As the immigrants in Mexico and in the Arab states learn what America is, they reject the propaganda that has been forced down their throats over the years. And I say this is a step, as Lynn says, in the right direction. We're learning. People are learning. The information revolution is working. And the moment we understand that, then this corporate juggernaut that's been rolling over everybody, stealing the resources of the world, poisoning the air, the food, the land, you know, that we live on, that will stop. And so I'm hopeful.
Well, I'm always hopeful, too, Ralph and Lynn. And one of the quotes that has inspired me for many years was from the now long-departed anthropologist Margaret Mead, who made the statement to the effect that never underestimate the power of a few committed people to change the world. And her tagline was, it's the only way it ever happens. If you expect that you're going to throw out the bums and throw out the bums for something else, all you're going to get is new bums every electoral cycle. And the last one in November 2012, I wrote an article that I titled, Vote Independent or Stay Home. Of course, voting
Would
independent.
Would you repeat that, Steve? What was the title?
The title was Vote Independent or Stay Home.
Okay.
That was in the, that was before the November 2012 election.
Right.
Of course, Lynn, voting independent really won't do very much, because even though most people in the country, I believe, now consider themselves independent, I guess they still let the ones who vote, which is roughly half the country opts out, and in an off-year election, it can even drop below that. People still end up voting for one of the two major parties, not realizing that they're both virtually the same. On all the major issues, I repeat this over and over again, and I can prove it with the stuff these people vote for. On all the major issues that matter most, war and peace, corporate empowerment, police state lawlessness, I mean the big stuff, the biggest stuff of all the issues are important, but some are more important than others. Certainly nothing is more important than war and peace with the stuff going on now that literally could develop into another global war.
Well, I agree with that, Steve, and there's certainly, you know, we may term it differently between Ralph and I. We call it not war and peace, but imperialism and fight back. And, you know, when you find people fighting back, and I include ISIS in that group, and when you realize that the actions of the United States are purely 18th, 19th century imperialism, let me take over this country and its resources, and then I will rule the world. I was interested today that I heard for the first time that, you know, capitalism and Ebola are inextricably locked together because of the money issue, because, of course, the only thing that can defeat Ebola is money. But nobody wants to spend money on the dark-skinned people of Southern Africa.
Well, I let me interject there, Lynn.
Yeah.
The Cubans, I believe, sent 128 doctors, a phenomenal number in any country, but for a small country like that.
11 million.
To export their education and continue doing it. But I'm going to jump back to the last subject we were talking about, and that is America. And I like the way Lynn puts it. She says, when you vote Republicans, if they take over, they become Democrats. And if you vote Democrats, then when they take over, they become Republicans. So you're voting the same when you vote for these two parties. But it's funny, but it is so true.
That was your point also, Steve, that there's very little difference. And if you cast some kind of protest, which Ralph for years worked for the Green Party and Cynthia McKinney and the good people that ran there, you know, to show that there were people out here that were not going to be taken in by this major corporate hype. Even that has gone nowhere. It hasn't helped the Green Party, and it hasn't helped us either.
Well, indeed so, and it dismays me greatly that we simply don't have the level of activism we saw back in the 60s with the anti-Vietnam War protests, the civil rights movement. This stuff is all moribund now. We don't see people may be upset, and you have pockets of people and outbreaks of public anger, like in Ferguson, Missouri, over the killing of a black youth. But this stuff comes and goes. It's local. It isn't national. We need something on a national basis with people so entirely fed up, they're not going to take this anymore. And it can be done. It can be done nonviolently. It can be sustained, and it can get results. It took 10, even with these protests, it took 10 years to end the Vietnam War. And even though we didn't have the best people in Congress, we had better people in Congress then than we have today. So we really
I'm keeping my fingers crossed. I had given up on Ferguson because I felt it was being completely managed when I heard this is the day of October rage. In other words, these trite names that the media gives this, that they were going to march on St. Louis, that they were going to once again protest. I thought, oh, here we go again, being hyped, you know, the people of Ferguson and the surrounding areas and people from outside being hyped. But when I heard that they told Sharpton to go home, because I have felt for many years in my own career, Steve, that Sharpton is a charlatan. He is someone who is placed on the front lines to mislead the people, to speak very, very eloquently, but very, very, well, I'm not going to say it as the Indians say, with a forked tongue, but he leads people astray. And he did it here in New York for years and years. And during the Larry Davis trial, he came to Ralph and I and said, I'd like to join in with you guys. This is a really worthy cause. And we said, go home now. We know you were a guy who cooperated with the FBI around Assata Shakur's escape. So we don't need you, and we've never needed him. And, you know, he was put on trial here also in New York for his misdeeds, for the way he misled things. But I don't want to take up too much time. Ralph, go ahead.
Lynn, the tip-off is, who gets on national TV and who does not?
You're right.
You don't see Lynn Stewart and Ralph Pointer on CNN or NBC. I have never once in my writing and media career of around 10 years ever one time been invited on corporate TV or radio. Never, never. But the people who get on there are the ones you have to be very suspicious about.
Well, reading your excerpt from the last book, they're not going to invite you because your analysis is not one they want to hear.
I would destroy everything they said. if they made a mistake and got me on, you know what they would do? They would quickly jump to commercial and then they would jump to a new topic.
Exactly. You know.
Well, we have been there. We have done that. We have, you know, even when I was hot news, we realized that even, quote, the good liberals like Amy Goodman didn't want to always hear what I had to say.
Mm.
Because I'm a little too radical. Is that the word? I'm a little
I'm a little too communist.
I'm a little whatever it is. But, you know, we're talking about now, and I'm not putting Amy down. Amy's program when I came home from prison was a tour de force. But I'm saying even, quote, the liberals, we are more than they want to cope with.
Because it's a question of change. How much change you up to is what it's about. And I like it's been said by so many people in so many ways, what does America want? They want the car in every garage, the remote, and the
recliner.
And so until we get over things, which it looks like we're going to get over them because they're going to take them from us. They're going to take water out from where you are. You know, you take water from people, you're kind of getting
in
down.
Chicago, Ralph. You're talking Detroit.
Detroit, yeah, out in that area. You know, everything west of the Hudson is out there. You know,
what a chauvinist. Oh, my goodness.
Anyway, they're taking from people. They've taken their homes. They've taken their jobs. In education, they've taken their future. And they're leaving some crumbs out here for people to struggle for. And that is educational, I believe. I do believe that.
Well, I've written a great deal about, just domestically, the third worldization of America, the fact that the U.S. economy is really a house of cards, and former Treasury official Paul Craig Roberts, who does such terrific writing, everybody should follow the articles that he writes. He uses that phrase, America is a
house
of cards.
Where does he write on? Where can we reach him?
If you simply Google his name, you'll go to his website, and you'll see all his articles. Just Paul Craig Roberts. You'll go right to his website. All his articles are there. Marvelous writing. He pulls no punches.
Gotcha.
He's a valued contributor to the book that I edited on Ukraine, Flashpoint
mm-hmm.
in Ukraine, How the U.S. Drive for Hegemony Risks World War III. And his writing in the book was very, very important. And coming from a former Treasury official back in the 1980s, it's powerful stuff, and Paul pulls no punches at all. But literally, you know, for the top 1%, it's paradise, Lynn and Ralph. It's paradise. They never had it better.
Until
the last few days, maybe, with the markets being rocked. We'll have to watch and see what happens on that. But they've made enormous amounts of money. And the top 10% have done okay. okay, but the rest of the people in the country have been third world eyes. They've been betrayed. They've seen homes lost. They've seen jobs lost. The jobs that are created are rotten ones, part-time temp with few or no benefits.
And how many people, Steve, are living one paycheck to the next?
Yes.
You know, aside from those who are really forced to live below a poverty line and are, you know, feeding their kids Cheetos, how many people are living one paycheck to the next? That's, to me, never was America when I was growing up. You know, we were so secure in the notion that America would always be great and powerful and we would always be rich and our fathers would always have jobs and all of these things. And now it's suddenly, you're right, or did you say this or did Ralph say this? It's a house of cards. It's a capitalist house of cards.
I really cited Paul Craig Roberts saying it's a house of cards.
Coming from someone like him,
it really has great meaning. But literally, there is a protracted depression with a capital D going on for the vast majority of people in the country. Things are as bad for them as it was for most people in America in the 1930s. That's the situation in America. And real unemployment is not the phony 5.9%. It's over 23%. If it's calculated the way it used to be in the 1980s, but they rigged the system. They rigged the system to get rid of all the people who, after 30 days, who can't find a job, stop looking. They become non-persons and they don't count anymore. So you get this phony 5.9% unemployment rate. It's something like 23.2 or 23%. That's depression level.
And in the black community, it's 50%.
Oh,
Harlem,
absolutely.
And Bed-Stuy.
Absolutely.
But one of the greatest crimes of this capitalist society, as I see it, is that they have convinced people to go to war to fight for, as Mr. Bush put it, President Bush, the freedoms we have. Mm. And the young men who went for that and then come home.
And women.
And come home injured. And the public does not force the wealthy to pay for that. What they ask the public to do is contribute $19 a month to help the wounded veterans and these guys who have given their all for the country. And the country doesn't say, well, let the rich give you a little bit.
At least in the Hundred Years' War, which was fought completely by mercenaries, just as we are fighting with mercenaries, our own children. But in the Hundred Years' War, those guys got paid. These guys, they get a pittance while they're serving, end quote. And when they get home, they are shoveled right on that same dung heap that we shovel the unemployed, that we shovel young blacks, that we shovel the forgotten people.
Yes.
That's exactly right. The recruiters promise them a rose garden, and what they end up with is a thorn bush. The policymakers in Washington, the Congress, the administration, they just don't give a damn about these young kids who are nothing more than cannon fodder for them. Send them overseas to fight these wars and don't give a damn about them when they come back, even if they're traumatized, if they have PTSD, if they have limbs blown off, they get rotten care in the VA. It's a disgusting system, but of course the permanent war policy of this country is what's most disgusting of all.
And we have to arouse the people, as you have been doing over the years, to understand this and to take a stand against it. This is our job, and we try to keep up with it, you know, in the face of what's going on. But I see cracks in the wall. When I remember, you know, what are you doing here? When they would say to every so-called immigrant, why don't you go home? And now I see they're saying, don't go home. You can't go home because what you have learned here should not be taught over there. Mexico.
I don't see that, Ralph, but I assume your sources are different from mine. I don't see them saying, don't go home. I'm just talking to my daughter who does immigration work, and she has 50 children she's representing that they want to send home to Honduras, which America destroyed and which America left with violence to even children. So I'm not sure about them telling immigrants, stay here.
I was referring, and I guess I got to rephrase that. I'm referring to the warriors who get angry here and want to go back home. And now there's...
Where's home? Tell me where home
is. ISIS. ISIL, mainly. They're stopping them in Turkey.
You've got to be very clear.
Very specific. Yes, you're right. I should have been very clear about that. But it's happening in Mexico, the drug lords, et cetera. Once they get their head straight, the guys who carry guns, then governments will fall.
You're too optimistic, I think. I like people that don't murder 46 kids in a school bus. I like the opposition in these various countries, particularly Mexico, to be a little more pointed. But that's a Lynn Ralph debate, which, as you can well imagine, Steve, goes on endlessly now that we don't restrict ourselves to 15 minutes a day on a prison phone. And to say, to change the subject for a minute, how happy I am to be home, how good it is to be able to speak with you openly, honestly, of a Thursday afternoon. It's just wonderful.
It is wonderful, Lynn. And of course, we got together in Chicago. Ralph, Lynn, myself had a wonderful get together, a lunch together. And I think Lynn knows and Ralph knows. I wrote so many articles about Lynn going back to when the Bush administration came down on her unjustly, literally, putting her in prison for defending the wrong client. That's the kind of America is today, whether it's Bush or Obama, the Congress, the people we have in the Congress. When you go after lawyers for defending the wrong client because the government wants them convicted, oftentimes innocent people, which was the case with the blind sheikh, at least I believe he was innocent, and he's serving a life term in prison.
I think he was blind, Steve, not black, but that's okay.
He said the blind.
Oh, did I say blind?
Oh, you said the blind. I misunderstood.
Oh, I said blind. I said blind.
And he probably is black, as a matter of fact.
Well, heaven knows what they're doing to him in prison, and he certainly doesn't belong there. And he was used and abused and then put away in prison for life because America decided he wasn't useful to America anymore. And this is the kind of stuff. And you were on a team with Ramsey Clark, a former attorney general of the United States, and even that didn't help you, Lynn. The Bush administration went after you and framed you in a kangaroo court trial and put you in prison unjustly, and thank heavens you're out. But you could call it a miracle that you got out and you're able to be a free woman again. But it might have turned out otherwise, Lynn, as you know.
Oh, man. I mean, I think, I don't wake up in the morning, Steve, and I think of the women in Carswell. I think of the women at that prison who are still suffering, many of whom are there unjustly, who are there because they had lawyers who didn't care what happened to them, who were making a buck on them. And that, to me, that is the greatest breach of confidence. You hand someone your life when you're a client, when you're a defendant, when you're accused by the most mighty government in the world. You give a lawyer your life, and then they trash it. I mean, I can't tell you how dismayed, how many bad stories I heard from the women of Carswell, and I just wish that I could communicate with them and tell them, don't ever give up. Keep on fighting. Keep on fighting. I heard last week that one of the people that I said that to most persistently did keep on fighting, and now they've knocked maybe 10 or 15 years off her sentence. I'm not going to go into all the details, but because of her persistence and her belief that she was righteous, she managed to do that, and I would say that to everybody who's under the thumb of the government. Whatever they're doing to you, fight back. Most important thing, you save your humanity by fighting back.
And I would conclude with not being a theist. I do not say thank heaven or thank God. I say thank you, Steve, and people like you to bring Lynn home so that we can have a fight politically after we hang up here about which road it is to go.
Well, it really shows that if you're committed enough for something that's important and you refuse to quit, anything is possible. Because, Lynn, I'm certain you, and Ralph, too, I'm certain you both went through dark times when you wondered if you would ever see each other again without bars separating the two of you. But it happened. It happened because you were committed, and it's amazing. It's incredible things can be accomplished when people are committed to do it. The quote that I love best, it's such a long one, I'd have to have it in front of me to read it verbatim, but the famous muckraking journalist I.F. Stone, who said to the effect that the only battles worth fighting are the ones you lose. Well, you didn't lose the battle, but he talked about fighting the battles you know you'll lose, because if you fight them, then somebody else will pick up the mantle after you, and they'll fight them, and maybe they'll lose. But at some point, somebody's going to grab that mantle and keep the fight going, and they'll win because of what others did before them. That's the essence of what he said, and I believe
that. Okay, well, I'm
going
to add to that for your listening audience, Marge Piercy, a wonderful woman poet. She wrote a great poem about if there's one of us, we can do this. If there's two of us, and she goes right on up to say, and if there's 100,000 of us, we can make a revolution. And to me, that's it. You organize yourself. Then you maybe get one other person to join you. I'm very, very, very lucky, Steve. Ralph can make me crazy sometimes, but he was what got me home. He enlisted everybody. He enlisted you. He enlisted the people on the West Coast. He enlisted people here in New York. And if it weren't for him, I would still be in those dusky, hot, disgusting Texas, waiting for Ebola to come and get me.
Oh, indeed. So, Ralph, I know you literally went all out and then some. You refused to quit. And that's the essence of winning struggles. You just have to believe in what you're doing and refuse to quit and keep going and hopefully enlist a lot of others to join you in the struggle. And the overall struggle we're going through right now is one that's so important to the vast majority of people in the country that you would think if we can get enough people involved in spreading the word and encouraging people, maybe we can get more involved in this struggle. But you won your individual struggle, Lynn. We have a huge one to somehow find a way to turn this country around. I don't know that I'll see it in my lifetime, but I'll keep fighting for it as long as I have breath left, and I hope that others one day will benefit from what so many good people do. If we don't do it, I just dread what's coming down the road.
I agree, and I'm with you shoulder to shoulder, arm in arm, Steve, because that is what must be done. There's also a poem talking about what must be done, and what must be done is we must have solidarity, and we must confront this evil empire.
It really is evil. A statement I've made a number of times is that no country in human history has done more harm to more people over a longer duration than America.
Bravo.
And I'm talking about going back 400 or 500 years.
Yes.
Before America became America and after America became America, annihilated virtually 100% of its native population, oh, maybe 95, 6, or 7%. If that isn't the definition of genocide, I don't know what is. And, of course, the Middle Passage with so many black slaves perishing, and I guess once they got here and became somebody's property, an owner of a piece of property doesn't want to destroy it, but it could certainly make life miserable for that piece of property when it's human, and that went on all too long, and it still goes on in other form. We got rid of chattel slavery and we replaced it with wage slavery.
And I just see, you know, the cutting of benefits by some of these corporations. I believe it was Walmart that announced the other day they were cutting all medical benefits to their employees. And I says, and when they can't take there, and this is my statement for 60 years, when this government can't take from the people over there, they will take from us here. And they are taking from us here. And we had hoped that we could arouse people's anger and their moral sense when they were taking from people over there. And now we're working on making them rise up when they realize they're taking from us.
Oh, indeed. I just happened to put out a new article this morning that's top on my blog site, at least for now. I call it a healthcare, a fundamental human right. I've written a lot about healthcare, and I wrote another article this morning. We got about a minute left. The time goes by so fast. Some final thoughts.
Well, Ralph, my final thought is that we're still here. We're still kicking. We're old. We don't kick nearly as hard, but I hope we're kicking a little smarter. And as my father said, you know, even if you have nothing but your fist and you're going against a brick wall, you hit it often enough, it will fall. thank you for hitting
me. Oh,
it.
I love that statement.
And I'm putting my fist inside Ralph's because he's got a great big fist. I got a little tiny fist. And just quickly for your listeners, Steve, I'm feeling pretty good. I have bad days and good days, but right now I'm sort of on an equal. We hope to be up in the country this afternoon and breathing some clean air, clean relative, but I have survived so far.
Lynn, that is wonderful.
The government
I know
on this one, too.
I know what
they
you mean by
I'd
that.
They said I'd be dead, and I'm here.
And that's the most important thing of all. I know what you mean by bad and good days. I certainly go through them myself, and I feel the same way. I'm here. I'm able to do my writing. I'm able to do my reading, media work, and thank God I can do it, and that means so much to me. I look forward to having you back. Will you both come back?
We second that motion.
You both come back.
Okay. Thank you, Steve.
Thank you, Ralph. Thank you, Lynn.
Thanks again.